And welcome to the brand new show. I'm Mike Indest. I've been hosting the podcast, The Basement Tapes, for Down the Line magazine for, I guess, about 5 years maybe now. And the magazine seems to be taking a little bit of a new direction. And with that, we decided to start a new podcast to develop as well that will kind of take things in a new direction. So this is the premiere episode. And with me today is the founder of Down the Line magazine, Matt Crossland. Welcome.
Welcome. Yeah, thank you very much. Good to be here.
Hey, well, you pay the bills, right? I got to give you the cred.
All that money is rolling in.
So, well, that's actually the first question I wanted to ask you because, you know, once people knew I was going to interview the elusive Dr. Matt Crossland, that was the first question people asked was exactly, you know, how much money have you made off of Down the Line magazine over the past 8 years or so, and how have you spent it?
You know, I lost count around $10 million. It was, too much was rolling in. I just couldn't count it all, and it was just, you know, throwing in the drugs and alcohol for so long, my brain went dead. I don't know what happened.
No. Well, I guess for a long time, that's kind of been the deep, dark secret, but I guess how, you know, this indie Christian music scene or whatever, how does it maintain its facade of not being a moneymaker?
The Christian music scene or the magazine?
Well, both. I mean, when you look at these things, everybody, oh, we don't make any money or whatever, but we know what's going on behind the scenes. It's just, it must just be you got a lot of money to use to hire some incredible marketing people, right?
Yeah, I mean, they pull in a good 150 readers. I mean, it's amazing what $5 million will buy you these days.
I mean, it's it really is. So the magazine has been around, I guess I'm thinking about 8 years. Am I right?
Yeah, 8, 9 years, something like that. Yeah.
So it's obviously a labor of love, and it was started by, from what I understand, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but you and Steve Ruff. Is that the genesis?
Yeah. 8 or 9 years ago, Steve and I were, we used to trade Michael Knott bootleg concert recordings whenever we get our hands on them. And, we're just kind of lamenting about how the scene was kind of non-existent and, there wasn't very much coverage, and you kind of had to dig around a lot of places to find information. And you might find out that someone that you listen to, you know, that you liked would put out a new album, but it was 2 years old because, you know, there wasn't much information out there. So, we just started discussing, you know, what should we do about this? And I was a fan, and I still am a fan of this band called Kula Shaker. They're kind of like this, they're British people, but they're like a Hindu rock band. It's hard to explain, like Britpop kind of stuff. They've been around since the 90s. They had kind of a minor hit with a cover of Deep Purple song, I think. But they're still around, and they have like sitars in their music. It's kind of cool stuff. And so they had a fanzine that was obviously just the fans of the band just kind of put together and put it out on PDF online for cheap and for free, actually. And so I said, you know, we could do that. I know how to put a PDF together. I know how to put a website together. And which might have proven to be wrong since all those websites are now dying. But that's another story. So we just decided to follow that model. And Steve, he was really good, and he still is really good at just calling people up. And, he connected with Michael Knott for the first issue and Brian Deutsch for the second issue, and just kind of kept on connecting with people. And so it just kind of snowballed from there.
So 9 years out, the magazine has covered former Christians, outright, I would say, some militant atheists at this point, and people who still have kept their faith, maybe some people whose faith has changed, all of whom are still creating art. So how would you actually define the scene that the magazine is covering right now?
Well, I think it just comes down to whatever, whoever volunteers, since the pay is, as we said, it's so large, whoever volunteers to do it and whatever they like and whoever they can connect with. Because there's always the people we would like to talk to who never return our emails. And then there's the people who we would like to talk to who do return our emails. And, Then there's a group of people that find us and want to be in us. There's actually, believe it or not, we joke around about being small and making no money and having a $0 budget, but every once in a while, some people will find us and say, "Hey, we want to be in your magazine." I'm like, "Oh, great! Cool. Let's do it." And so, unless they're like the whatever that King Lover dude was, I think I was telling y'all about, that he was really adamant. His baby, "I want to have sex with your song," or whatever, that he kept on wanting us to play. I was like, "No, that's not our scene, man." So there is some stuff that is kind of outside of us, outside of what we cover, but it really comes down to really what we're interested in. And that kind of, it's hard to articulate. So maybe we should come up with a better description, but I'll review a Kula Shaker album, or, people go find some band that I've never heard of and say, "Hey, can I interview them?" And I'm like, "Sure," And so it really just comes down to the people who volunteer to work with us and who they want to cover, really.
But there is, according to the mission statement, which, like you just mentioned, may need to be changed a little bit, but it was the idea of, originally anyway, people like Michael Knott or Ojo Taylor, people who had some connection with faith and music in the 80s and 90s, maybe, who kind of you lost track of or kind of disappeared once the internet happened, or?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's definitely was the what we began with. It was those people, especially those that were kind of already on the underground anyway, when they were in their, I guess you could call it their heyday, their biggest period, which wasn't very big for a lot of them. But, you find one on MySpace and they're still putting out music, but that's the only place they're at. Another one is kind of trolling this forum over here and like, "Oh yeah, by the way, I've got 3 CDs out in the past." And you're like, "What, really? What?" And so, they once were connected by what was kind of the Christian alternative music scene, and then they kind of just scattered in a lot of different directions when that fell apart. And not just musically with their music or projects, but also, like you said, with their faith. We're not one of the things I found kind of the most annoying about that scene was how I just kind of policed everyone's faith and said, "You have to believe this or else you're wrong or you're bad." And so we from the beginning, we just said, we're not going to police people's faith, or what they do and don't believe. I'm not even sure what I believe sometimes from day to day. So, we just want to talk to people who are making interesting music. What's the quote? Is it Bono, I guess, who said that he finds the most, I think we've talked about this before, that the people that are making the most interesting music are those who are running towards God or away from God or whatever. I agree with that. Even sometimes people are just kind of sitting in the middle and they don't really know, those are still interesting too. So.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to see, the changes. I mean, for me, it was interesting to see when the magazine initially interviewed people that I haven't heard from that just disappeared. In particular, Rick Alba, and he just put out a record, which is fantastic.
I listened to it yesterday. It's really good.
It sounds like a cross between, well, I don't want to say that. It has some elements of like Ecstasy, but also Pink Floyd in there, but it's definitely, he's got his own voice for sure. And his last album, which was many years ago, Holes in the Floor of Heaven, I could still consider that like in my top 10 because it was angsty, to, reference what you just said, that Bono quote. In fact, Rick Alba on his Bandcamp page says that's kind of his influence. If he doesn't have anything, let me find it so I don't misquote him. Let's see here. He says, here we go. But actual songs always had to come from some state of angst. And so I definitely respect him for waiting many years till he felt that again before he put out a record, because I think it really made a difference. I think it's a really good record because, he didn't just have to put another one out because a record company was telling him to or whatever. And to me, that makes the interesting music when somebody's kind of pissed off a little bit.
Yeah. So Rick Alba is definitely one of those people that would not pass by the gatekeepers if they were around today. He definitely has a lot. He definitely has a lot of faith, and it definitely is a lot of beliefs, but they're just in a different direction than a lot of the gatekeepers would have allowed back in the day. And to me, that doesn't matter. He's putting out some interesting music that has some interesting things to say. So, even where I agree or disagree with him is kind of irrelevant as long as I'm, you know, listening and growing from it.
And he's one of those ones that I first got in contact with again because of Down the Line. So that's where I think the magazine is very valuable, because these people that y'all have found, or they found you or whatever, I now can hear their story, at least from where I last heard it, you know, where it left off at a certain point, and see where they are now. That to me is the value in the magazine, and to keep that dialogue going. I know, at least on social media, though, that's created a little bit of some hostility, maybe, you would say?
Yeah, definitely.
So go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm just glad that the magazine allows someone to say what they need to say and represent themselves how they want to represent themselves, at least in a fixed form.
Yeah.
So we've covered there was a interview with Rick a while back in a special issue, I believe, and then Joey Taylor, another one from I don't want to say the 80s, because that's maybe pigeonholing someone too much, but someone who I last heard from around the 90s, I guess, the early 90s or whatever, who kind of disappeared, had a MySpace page for a while, and then came back. And it was good to hear a couple of interviews that we had with him. So the feedback, because you get all the emails for the feedback, when you started interviewing these people, and all of a sudden their story turned in a direction that may have been shocking to the readers. What response did the readers have? Did a lot of them resonate with that search or that change of heart or mind or a different sort of faith, or was there a lot of kickback?
Yeah, there was a lot of both, really. I tended to hear most from the people that it resonated with. Those are kind of people I start connecting with, like you. Through either Facebook or through other venues, and then I've become Facebook friends with a few people that, you know, really resonated with the fact these people were, you know, either spiritually or politically, you know, had gone in different directions, and, you know, saw that it was okay, you could still be a Christian, or you could still be an okay person even if you weren't a Christian anymore, you know, and saw that, you know, that we were definitely taking a stand for that thought. But most of the kickback, I think, was directed at the artists themselves. Definitely when you see, like, Ojo sharing Joey Taylor, whatever, I'm not sure exactly what name he goes by now, but when you see him sharing his story, he definitely gets a lot of kickback on his website, even if he's sharing about, you know, an interview in our magazine. I think a lot of it has gone from, because of the way the web has gone, the way the scene has gone, I think a lot of the kickback goes back to the band. I tend to get the people that are either like, you know, they're kind of like, hey, that's cool, thanks, you know, or you guys are spawning a Satan, and I'm going to condemn you to hell for doing things wrong, you know. It's, and those are just, I don't know. We've had our fair share. I've shared with you some of those stories, but we've had our fair share of people that are not happy with us for all kinds of reasons, really. I mean, one time we even covered this guy who had apparently been in jail for, like, embezzling people, and people, like, would call up Steve and cuss him out on his answering machine, and Steve would forward me the message. I'm like, whoa, that person's not happy. You know, just things like that. You know, it's I really don't know how to respond to stuff like that. We just keep doing what we're doing. And I've been in a few arguments with people online, Facebook. I think we all have, you know, about political or religious differences, but, you know, that's just kind of what the way the world has gone. And you're just, you know, the only way to avoid that for anyone is just to not go online today, you know, these days anymore. So that's not anything that's really special that happens to us because we're in a magazine. It's just, I think, happening to everyone out there.
I think the beauty maybe of a magazine, especially when you're interviewing someone, is you allow them to tell their story without having the immediate, arguments from someone. So when you interview someone who's had a challenge in their faith, I guess that's a light way to put it, or maybe even just, you know, a complete denial of what they believed before, to me, the beauty of the magazine is that you let someone tell their story how they want to tell it in their own way without having that those constant interruptions going on. Whereas if you post something on Facebook, people can immediately respond without hearing your full story. And I think some of these stories, they are stories, right? It's not just somebody preaching. You get to hear someone's struggle as they've maybe in some cases worked out their own salvation. There may be some case don't believe any of it anymore. But I think in some ways the magazine is a little more personalized than it is online, which is, or at least on social media, which is weird because it should be the exact opposite, you would think. But I think when you have to sit down and listen to someone's entire story without being able to comment, it maybe humanizes them a little bit more.
Yeah.
Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. We're covering people that have they tended to have backed away or just run away from kind of the extreme right wing political Christianity, and they're just trying to live their life for who they are, whether it's with their sexuality, with their politics, with their faith, with their whatever. They're not trying to, you know, change the world to everyone believe exactly like them. They're just trying to gain equal footing with this kind of, you know, dominant mindset, in at least, you know, within their sociocultural context of the church or the community they live in or whatever. So, you know, it's not like we're having people on, you know, these aren't people that are trying to, like, you know, force their beliefs on everyone. They're just trying to, you know, be themselves and be treated equally as everyone else. And so that was kind of what drew me to a lot of their stories, was that their agenda is really not this, like, large, huge political thing. You know, they're trying to change the world. They're just trying to make their own lives better, right? So, and in doing so, they've gotten away from this extreme right-wing political religious machine of evangelicalism that was, trying to use the right word here that won't be, like, too melodramatic or whatever, but, you know, just there's a lot of stifling, a lot of, cloneliness, I guess. We'll just borrow from Steve Taylor on that, you know, in that whole scene, in that whole machine, really. So that's what we're really trying to do, is not necessarily push a political agenda, but just let these people who are just trying to get an equal voice with everyone else, a platform to have that equal voice.
You know, it's interesting to see how some of these bands, and I'll just off the top of my head, Dave Bazan, right? So he's played at Audio Feed, at Cornerstone, and I'm pretty sure he's played at last Audio Feed, but he's not a Christian at all anymore, right? You know, Dave Bazan from Pedro the Lion. It's interesting to see how he responds to the Christian audience. And because of the way he has responded and interacts with the Christians, he's allowed to still speak his mind and play at these venues, because there seems to be still a very friendly, open dialogue going on. And Rachel Held Evans spoke at a conservative Baptist church here in town, which I was really surprised. But I think it's because of the way she presents herself. So it's interesting now in this using Christian music as a source of indoctrination, or use it as some sort of propaganda, to now Christians, at least on a very small scale, it seems, being able to not just use music as some sort of worship device or something, or somebody's book or whatever, but having to interact with that. And I just got an email that Tony Campola is going to be at the Baptist Theological Seminary here Tuesday night, debating on rights of homosexuals, and they were letting him speak in the chapel there. That would have been unheard of 20 years ago.
Wow.
Now it's a debate, right? So it's not just he gets to speak and say whatever he wants, but it's a very open dialogue, and I applaud them for getting someone of a high caliber to debate those issues, and not just finding somebody who has no biblical knowledge at all off the street, and then, you know, you can pound them into the ground. So it's interesting to see that this scene that where we the Christian music scene, and I'm doing air quotes here, of a Joe Taylor who can still perform or has performed with his current belief system, which I don't, he can define that himself, with Undercover, or him and Rick performing in Brian Healy's band at a church, opening up for Michael Knott. That never would have happened 30 years ago. There would have been people in the parking lot piling up the wood and lighting the fire.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, and I feel like even though, you know, we don't have the millions of readers, I don't know if anybody else, as far as like a print magazine goes or an online magazine, is really enhancing that dialogue. I mean, there's some other ones out there, but I feel they don't cover some of the more obscure music, and they kind of do that, but maybe on a more superficial level, and maybe for a younger age group. You know, I feel like people in their 30s, 40s, and up are struggling with some serious issues from what they grew up with, believing what they believe now, maybe in the light of other evidence or whatever. And it's exciting to me that there's music for that age group and for that struggle. We're not all just listening to, you know, Dave Matthews Band or whatever. You know, there's some good music out there for people who are still engaging in that struggle. And it's a little bit hopeful for me that it seems anyway that the conservative evangelical church, probably because they're losing millions of people, is open to at least hearing why people left and hearing the struggle of those people who don't believe the same way anymore. Do you get the same vibe where you live?
It seems like where I live, I've heard of that happening, but there's still a lot of churches that are just kind of digging their heels into, and they're just saying, you know, you believe what we believe, or you're just out, you know. I think you're kind of seeing a bit of a polarization in the church on that issue in some places. I mean, I can only speak for, you know, here in Texas, there's a lot of really big churches around here, and you step in them, and it's definitely, you know, kind of leave our way or hit the road, you know. A pastor of First Baptist Dallas has kind of become a national figure, Jeff Davies or whatever his name is, but, he'll get on TV to have a debate with someone about the homosexuality issue, and he'll basically just talk the whole time, not let the other person speak, you know, and just keep throwing Bible verses at him and just be a total jerk to him, you know. And they'll just find someone who either just doesn't respond or doesn't have much to say as much as, you know, as far as a very strong response on the other side. And it just kind of becomes this really obviously one-sided debate, and it's on the local news, you know. You'll just be like, they'll actually be on some local news show doing this debate, and it's kind of a sad joke in some ways, you know. And so it's kind of hard to really see beyond that. I know that there are good things happening, but like, you know, even if we look for a non-evangelical church around here, they're hard to find. So I may just be kind of, you know, I'm stuck in a very, very politically right-wing area, so that could be a lot of the influence there as well.
Well, at least with the magazine, right, you have some outlet for expressing those yeah, those other views. So if people are listening and have, you know, just found this on iTunes and they haven't heard about the magazine, but maybe people are interested in like, hey, I have a good story to share, or I would like to write for you, all they have to do is visit downthelinezine.com, and there's a contributor link, I think, or an email or a way to get to you to ask.
Yeah, there's a way to contact us on there to contributor if you want to talk with us about it, yeah.
So that being said, and, you know, we've covered a lot of stuff from music to theology or whatever, but I know in this upcoming new issue we're interviewing Frank Schaefer, who's an artist. He was also an author, and he wrote a book that I really liked, Why I'm an Atheist and Still Believe in God and Talk to Jesus Every Day, because I think he addresses that doubt. You know, I believe and don't believe at the same time, which is, you know, something I think a lot of us feel. So we're interviewing an author. You know, we've thrown out some names of some people we'd like to have in there. But if anybody's out there listening and feels like, hey, you know, I really would like to ask so-and-so some questions, I just need a venue besides, you know, social media to do that. they please get in touch, because you know, the bigger we can build this thing up, the better. And then of course we also cover music, which that was the start of it, right? That's mainly what it's what it's all about. But it seems like the music, the faith in music, kind of opened up a wider discussion of faith. And the music thing has been interesting for me, watching how bands dealt with things when they had a record label and they had a budget versus how they're dealing with things now when they don't necessarily have a record label or don't have a budget, or they got to continuously put out music in order to pay the bills or whatever. And that's been a little weird for me, I'll be honest, if you want to maybe have that conversation a little bit. There's been a lot of bands that I was fans of in the 80s and 90s that put out a record a year, or, you know, record every 2 years, which was good, you know, solid, you know, produced well or whatever. And now some of those guys are putting out records all the time, or I feel on some level demanding too much of my attention and too much of my money in order to get something, in some cases, that just isn't as high quality as I know I can expect from them. And again, that's why I really respect Rick Alba. You know, the album's $7 on Bandcamp, and he, you know, he was honest about, hey, I needed to put something out when there was some angst behind it. So he waited to do that, and it was really a worthwhile event. Whereas I don't have a huge music budget at all, and so I've gotten off of people's email list or whatever that I've been big fans of, just because I feel like they were, I had this barrage almost every day of, hey, check out this new song, or please support this record or whatever. So for me, I've kind of had to whittle down who I listen to, only because I can't afford to. I feel like I'm being sold. I feel like it's a friend who just joined Amway, and anytime you talk to them, they're trying to sell you Amway. So what's your thoughts on that? Because you see it from a fan perspective, as well as how do we promote this stuff when somebody's constantly sending, you know, press releases or whatever. And there's really no filter there that they maybe should have before they're sending stuff out or putting stuff out. I don't want to get you in trouble. If you don't want to answer that question, that's fine.
Yeah. Well, yeah. See, we kind of see two things on that. At least I do. Is that, you know, we get the people that will put out this really long press release for the fact that they've got a coffee house show coming up, or they've decided to add a third song to the EP, or, you know, whatever, for every little detail. And then we'll see people that'll appear out of nowhere and say, oh, I've got a new album out, and that's it, you know. And I'm like, so, okay, I'm either making up a press release on the spot, right, for the people that don't do it, or I'm looking at this thing like, okay, this is the third announcement this week. I can't have you up on our website, you know, three times a week,
right,
where this, all this stuff is coming in. So, you know, and you're right with the quality thing. I was trying to remember one of the people in the prayer chain was, and I think it was actually one of our issues, but they were saying it's like, you know, all these people recording in their home studio, and they're saying that they can achieve the same quality as the old record stuff, and you really can't. You can do a pretty good job, but if you think that you're still getting this album out that's the same quality as it was back in the 90s, when you actually were in a studio and you had a producer, that's not right. You know, it's just not happening. If you embrace those limitations and say, okay, I can't get a producer in here to kind of whittle down some of these, you know, I've got too many ideas, or I can't, you know, pull in a songwriter to help me when I don't have enough ideas or whatnot, you know, if you just embrace that, you know, then maybe you put out an EP, or, you know, you just put out a regular, you know, you just cut off some songs and say, you know, hey, this is just this will be the B-sides collection or whatever, you know. But if you, you know, yeah, it's hard just because there was a lot of quality control that the scene, the record labels and all that did kind of bring into it. And when you had all these albums that were out, and obviously they're in bookstores, and it's kind of weird that they're in bookstores, and, you know, that was a whole other issue. But, you know, but the albums were out there and they had this high quality, then a lot of times the independent bands were also trying to get us that quality. Instead of putting out a lot of albums, they were already saving up their money and focusing on, you know, one album, you know, rather than several albums a year or whatever they were saying now. And I don't necessarily have a problem with people that, like, you know, you and a lot of the collective, that they sit in their house and they just put together some music and they put it out for free or for really cheap. You know, that's great. You know, I really enjoy the kind of lo-fi quality of that. But, you know, when you've got these bands that are doing all these Kickstarters and trying to get the label, trying to kind of recreate the label feeling through, you know, the Kickstarter thing and through the lists, and, you know, then you kind of do still expect a little bit more from that, you know?
Yeah,
I'm not really sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's challenging because there's so many bands, I just can't, like I said, I just can't support anymore because they're demanding too much from me. Mm-hmm. And honestly, sometimes hyping things way too much, at least with a record label, it was somebody else hyping it. And you could kind of, you know, mm-hmm. step back a little bit. But when you're hyping, I don't know, I felt like I've been duped over the last few years with bands hyping things that weren't really that good and then demanding a whole lot of money on a regular basis to continue to hype things that it's their best ever. And it's just not up to par. It's just kind of a weird, like I said, it's like a friend who sells Amway. You know, you run as fast as you can, and you kind of lose the friendship in the running away or whatever. So it's just, that's just the state of it. I mean, I'm not offering any, suggestions or solutions or whatever. It's just an observation. I guess, one observation though is, when somebody puts out a ton of stuff, it's, you kind of, I feel, dwindle or dilate your, dilute your, you know, if I said, hey, Matt, go check out this band and, you know, there's 4,000 songs. And of course you pick out the 10 that aren't really that good, because you're just taking a gamble. You know, I feel like on some level, if you want to maintain your integrity or maintain, hey, this is what we're really about, it seems like some quality control would be a good thing to do. So you always have your best foot forward and your best material out there. And not just a bunch of stuff that somebody's going to have a really difficult time sorting through.
Yeah, or even if you're going to do that, because I know that some of the bands that do that because they do have fans that are asking that, hey, you know, you said you were recording this stuff. I want to hear it. Yeah, where are the demos? Or, you know, there are some bands that do attract the fans that want that. So I think it's kind of better to differentiate, right, between these are the albums that I'm putting my time and money into. So if you're going to focus on the albums, here's that. If you want to listen to the fan club demos, then here's that, you know. And Bandcamp has a way to do that, you know, at the backstage or whatever it's called, the feature that that you can do that with. And I think that if you are going to do that, then because I mean, I know the pushback, people are going to say, well, but my fans want this. I've heard from my fans, they want it. So, okay, well, that's great. Then let's put that in a fan club area so people understand that this is, you know, fan club quality stuff, you know. Because everyone, you know, anyone that listened to music back in the 80s and 90s, they heard of the fan clubs, right? And we all knew that was the leftover music, right, that the really hardcore fans wanted. So, you know, at least make that differentiation between here's the stuff I'm putting the time and effort into and here's the fan club stuff, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I do like, you know, Terry Taylor's been doing a fan club thing, and I've been listening to it on Bandcamp, and he's got some of his best material on there. The song "The Hits Keep Coming" is just, you know, classic, really good Terry Taylor stuff. But he put it on, it's on DanielAmosBoots.com. So, you know, it's not on the main thing, and it's called like Bedroom Tapes or something. So you know what you're getting. And that's fine. I just feel like sometimes I got duped when, you know, somebody puts out something like that, but hypes it up, you know, like it's a real thing or, you know, whatever. And you're like, well, this, you know, that wasn't worth the $10 I just spent or, you know, whatever. So that's just my, you know, I have no suggestions. I'm not, you know, that's just, I just get upset when I personally get duped, I buy something because somebody hyped it up bigger than it was because they needed to make some money or whatever. But anyway, that's that. But anyway, it's 35 minutes is up. Thanks again. I know there's plenty more to talk about. But again, if people are out there listening going, okay, this sounds interesting. You know, I've had a struggle of faith too. I'm an artist. I mean, we're pretty much open to whatever, right? If somebody wanted to, you know, write an article on what, politics? Could they do that from a faith perspective, or what? Where are we drawing the line?
Yeah, that's, we had that discussion on email a couple months ago, and you know, we definitely see that. Kind of sounds morbid, but there's the 80s, 90s music is kind of having its, you know, its days probably are numbered over the next 10 years or so. And you know, if we want to keep going, we're going to start, you know, expanding to other musical ventures, other bands that fit outside of that, but also into other thoughts, whether they be on politics or be on, art or, a movie or whatever, we're pretty much open to that's kind of what Steve and I talked about originally. We just didn't necessarily have a lot of time to develop that as much, but, you know, this kind of multiple media, you know, not just music, but art or books or politics or whatever. We're open to it all. I think, we had an issue where a couple issues back where people had said some things that upset a few people. And looking back at it, I was like, yeah, I should have kind of pulled that in. I don't think they meant to really be coming across the way that they were, because I knew the dude that was saying it. But we had some people wondering if we're going to go alt-right out of that or whatever. I was like, no, we're definitely not alt-right. We'll probably draw a few lines, maybe at some extreme political views. I don't want people going around calling people, libtardians or conservative Nazis or whatever. I don't want to get into that kind of, demonizing people. If you want to demonize Nazis, that's fine with me. But, as far as just normal people, we want to try to avoid some of that. And we'll dialogue with people if they start getting too extreme. I was, there for a while, actually, down the line, it actually died. So I don't know if people know that. That may be kind of news to you. Last year, the downline just died. Like, the website was just gone. It just stopped working. And so I just, no one sent anything in for a couple of months. And then I Doug Peterson, I think, sent something in. I was like, I better get this up. So, I logged in, and the website is, I go to the website, just nothing there. It's a blank screen.
Oh, yeah, I never saw that.
I've been down for like 2 months, apparently, according to logs. I had Frankenstein this theme together, and it quit working, and so it just killed all the stuff behind the scenes is still there, but just the display, it just killed the code for the display, and nothing came up. So it died. The Knothead site died. I had all these websites dying on me. It was just because they were just getting old. I wasn't paying attention to them. So I've been spending the last few months redesigning everything, as you know. So it's all coming back. So people will probably see we've got a radio playlist that's up now. We're trying to promote some of the bands that we cover and some of the bands in the collective in there. I've got this new podcast on there. We got a few other things that we're cooking up on there. So if people see something that they want to participate in, they can just contact us, and we're pretty open to a lot of different topics and a lot of different ideas. But if anyone goes kind of over the line on anything, we'll definitely have a dialogue about that.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much, and we look forward to seeing the next issue.
Yeah, me too. Should be a good one.